I wasn't angry with my mom that she went back and slept with a man that she had been in love with and married to for 10 years. I wasn't mad about that. Never will be mad. What I could not live with was the way I was treated after the facts came out.
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. Welcome to episode 191, and this is probably our last chance to talk about the Untangling Our Roots Summit happening in Denver, Colorado, April 25th through 28th of 2024. You can still buy tickets. This is an experience for people that are MPEs, people in the adoption world or affected by adoption, and the assisted reproductive communities. We have so many similarities between us. We really do. Secrecy, lies, rejection, reunification, genetic mirroring, dealing with family dynamics of new family members. So many similarities between our communities. So this summit is a chance for all of us to get together. There will be speakers. I will be speaking both on Friday with other podcasters and Saturday at the event. I'll be speaking about my estrangement experience along with some other adoptees and donor-conceived individuals who are currently in estrangement with their families as well. So this will be a great thing for me. I am a little nervous about it. I always get nervous before events with new people, but I always leave feeling so good and so connected. So you can still get tickets for this event. And I just checked last night, tickets to Denver flights are really cheap. And maybe that's just from the city I'm coming from, but they were like $80, $69, $129. I don't know. Maybe Denver's just a cheap place to fly to where I live. I'm coming from Minneapolis, but feel free to look into this, the Untangling Our Roots Summit. I'll put a link down below, and I would love to see you there. You do still have about a month to prepare for this event. And today we are going to be speaking with an NPE, and we're going to hear her story. And today I'm speaking with Laura H. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Lily.
Oh, sorry about getting on here. I know it's so hard dealing with podcasting software, but thank you for being patient and doing this with me.
Thank you for your help.
Oh, of course. So I have not heard your story. I do know that you learned you were an NPE about 6 years ago?
In the fall of 2016. Time is flying. Almost 8 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that's true. I guess there's like over a year-long wait till I get the stories. Okay, so you're going on into 8 years almost.
Yes.
All right. So let's hear more about Laura. Who was in your family of origin, and what was your childhood like?
I was born in Lake Charles, Louisiana in June of 1969 to my mom's second marriage. My mother had been married before, so I had four older siblings with a different last name. And the first 5 years of what I can remember of the first 5 years until I got into kindergarten were happy, fine, deeply loved my dad and my family, and I don't remember a single problem. And halfway through my kindergarten, or in the holiday period of my kindergarten year, so that would have been November of 1974, my father was killed in a plane crash. Mm. And the plane was not found for a period of 6 weeks. And so he was a pilot who you could hire him to fly you in his private plane, a small Cessna, for various activities. This particular one was a deer hunt in West Texas, and a friend of his same age at the time, 38. This particular man had a 16-year-old brother, and he also had a 16-year-old son, so they were like twins. He brought them on this deer hunt, hired my dad to fly them, and the accounts of people who were there with them remarked that everyone had a nice time, a successful event. And on their way back from Junction, Texas to Lake Charles, they disappeared and were not found for 6 weeks, which put that right around between Christmas Day and New Year's Day. In fact, I think the four funerals took place on New Year's Day. And so that began that very surreal and frankly just horrible event, indescribably just horrible event, I guess set the tone for everything that happened after. She had separated from him about a month before his plane crash, and he had gone to live with his mother, and there was a relationship that she had a friend at the time, and they, I'm sure, due to her just this catastrophic event in her life, and that she and her friend cared deeply for each other, they married about 5 months later, and that man became my stepfather. And he also had two daughters, so I acquired two stepsisters along with my four existing half-siblings. And we spent the next four decades as a blended, sometimes strange, sometimes fairly normal family. I became interested in genealogy in my late 30s and chose the platform Ancestry as the database. I chose that database to work with. I believe it was around 2012 that I established a membership with Ancestry. The DNA product that they offer was always just kind of a sidebar in the background. I knew about it, never paid much attention to it, didn't really understand it. But they did something brilliant. Ancestry did a really brilliant television ad campaign for several years. And of course, anyone who watched TV was bound to catch one of their commercials. The guy in the Lederhosen who thought he was German, but then he realized he was Italian or something like that. And the little maps that they would show. And it you know, started to increase my interest. Not enough to buy it, but I became further interested in it until one day I was sitting in my mother's kitchen and she just casually mentioned to me, "Your brothers and sisters have a new sibling, a newly discovered sibling, but I've always known about her." That's what she said. That's what my mother said to me. Well, this was just shocking to me. And so she voluntarily just told me everything about this person named Angela. My mother's first husband had a girlfriend, and Angela's mother became pregnant. And my mother remarked that, well, she was my friend. She was a girlfriend of mine. And she had Angela on my birthday. And I went to see Angela in the hospital. And I took one look at her dimpled chin and I knew that she belonged to Jack, which is my mother's first husband, Jack. I came back to my own house and I found Angela on Facebook and I messaged her and I said, "Hey, I'm the younger half sibling to your newly discovered siblings. We chatted. I shared pictures with her of her new siblings that had been my siblings my whole life already. So I had a ton of pictures. And we chatted on Facebook Messenger. Nice to meet you. You know, if I can ever be of help, let me know. I told her that I could probably provide her with a lot of information if she chose that. She thanked me and said, yeah, it's all, you know, it's all kind of new. There was a suspicion, but I just finally had to put it all to rest and find out instead of just going on suspicion. And for the next 3 or 4 months, I thought a lot about her and what a strange introduction this was to things as I knew them. And it might have been the catalyst for my decision to eventually go ahead and just order it for myself, because I already knew who all my family members were. It wasn't for the purpose that a lot of people may acquire that product because they have questions or they think they might not know something. Mine was just for the fun of it, that I thought that map was really neat, the color chart, and you're this percentage Irish or this percentage Italian. I just thought that would be so neat to get that. So I did it. I even took my time about sending it back in, just had a very casual attitude about it. When I did get it back, it comes in the form of an email. I opened an email one night, I believe it was in September or October of 2016, I was 47 years old. And I remember something about a tab that said, you know, maybe origins, and then another tab that said, click here to see your DNA relatives. When I clicked on that, the very first DNA match was my oldest sister that I had been raised with. My second DNA match was Angela, the girl that I had spoken to over the phone that my mother had told me about so casually in her kitchen a few months before. And I, you know, I stared at that for a long time thinking, well, maybe since my oldest sister and I took this test, you know, we kind of took it at the same time. We had kind of collaborated on it. Maybe they sent me her DNA results through some kind of way, because the subsequent names under that were all the names of my mom's first husband's family. But there were no names of Charles Hanchy, who was my dad that I was born to. So I called my sister, whose name was at the top of the list, who had encouraged me to go ahead, what I had been thinking about anyway. Yeah, do it for fun. Go ahead. Well, in fact, I haven't done mine yet. Let's just do it together. I called her. She said, oh, that's obviously a mistake. You know, there's a number that you can call. So I did call. I did get a person on the phone with Ancestry. Very, very kind person, very calmly walked me through their process without getting too highly scientific. And she said something to me that I've never forgotten. She said, ma'am, I will just tell you, we get calls like this all the time of people who are concerned that we have sent them the wrong person's results, or that we have somehow mistakenly sent them the wrong results. And let me just tell you that that couldn't have happened. There's a barcode. There's a procedure. The results you received are 100% the findings of the result of the sample that you sent in. So there was no further question about whether they had confused my results with someone else's. And in the, I want to say almost childlike very trusting, gullible attitude I've always had about things. I just still knew even after speaking to that lady that it had to be a mistake. And my oldest sister was certainly trying to convince me that it was, that her father was not also my father, no matter what all those DNA matches on my list, no matter what that said, that there was just no way. There was just no way that Charles was not my dad. There was just no way that her father, Jack, my mom's first husband, there was just no way that that was my dad. Let me just back up and say that my mom's first husband's name is Jack. My mom's second husband's name is Charles. Charles is who I was born to. Okay. Charles had been married before my mother and had a daughter who I've always had a close relationship with. She lives in Oregon. I called her. I said, I need you to help me solve a problem. I would like for you to please order the ancestry DNA test, which she did. And 6 weeks later, she called me back and said that I was not a match on her DNA results. So I picked up the phone and called Jack, my mom's first husband, a man I had known and loved my entire life. He was there. He was in my life from the day I was born. In fact, I had always been told that he had come to see me in the hospital the day I was born. I had always known him because he was the father of my four older siblings. He had literally been around since day one. As you can imagine, if you live in a home where you have siblings and their dads, you know, kind of always around to pick them up or whatever, you're familiar with him, you know him. And I did, and I just adored him. And the day that I called him, the first week of December of 2016, I said, hey, how you doing? He knew immediately. I mean, we just picked up where we had left off from last time we had seen or spoken to each other, which had been several years because my mom had kind of put a stop to our friendship years earlier. We had a friendship, but she had kind of put a stop to it. I never really understood why. But on this day, December 6th or so of 2016, when he picked up the phone and that familiarity just picked right back up. Hey, is everything okay? What's going on? Wondering what on earth I could be calling him for. And I said, Jack, do you think there's any possibility that I could be your daughter? And he had an adorable habit of singing out the word, why do you want to know? What's prompting, basically what he wanted to know is what is prompting this question? And so I began to tell him, and everything went from there. Two more years of just really kind of when you take your t-shirt out of the dryer and it's inside out and you have to turn it back to the right side. Except it took a really long time. He finally agreed to just let go of the questions and the secrecy and just finally invite me over one day. And he just let it all out. He wept openly, profusely. We were sitting in chairs facing each other, and he wept, catching his breath, weeping, that kind of crying. And he said that your mother told me the day you were born that you were my daughter. And I've always suspected that could be true, but there were a lot of people that could have been hurt by that information. And so his admission of it, along with all of the scientific evidence of it, then the realization that I look just like him, my children look just like him, you know, so much evidence. My mother never spoke to me again. When it got back to her that let's go back to December let's go back to December of 2016. When it got back to her that I had done this test and that Cindy, my half-sister that lived in Oregon, was not a DNA match to me, she never spoke to me again. And I lived in pretty much the same neighborhood with my mom. I saw her, if not on a daily basis, multiple times a week. We had had a rocky relationship for most of my life, off and on, sometimes good, sometimes not good. But we had had a good run at that point for several years. Things were in a nice little niche for us. It ended abruptly. I was threatened financially. I was given an ultimatum that I could either never speak of this again, pretend this never happened, or I would be disinherited and disowned. So as 2017 began, and as one does with a paradoxical, happy while also devastating, while also confusing, but yet strangely, extremely clear situation. It was rough for a couple of years there. My husband tried to understand, my adult children tried to understand, my friends tried to understand, and all the while I could not make anyone understand. It was like the birds kept flying through the sky and the cars kept passing on the road. And I just wanted to say, hey, everybody, listen, what do I do? What do I do? It was like reliving Charles's death all over again. It was anger and confusion that my mother had let me live for 42 years thinking that my dad was dead and he was actually living a few miles from me. I never suspected. I had this whole other family that I knew growing up and were friends with and acquaintances with and went to church with and had no idea that they were my family. They were my siblings' family. And so therefore I was treated by them fondly and, you know, affectionately. Even that part ended. Once I became their known blood relative, many of them did not want to be involved either. And I found out later that she went to several of them and said that I was crazy, that I was lying, that they should cut their ties with me, that I had lost my mind, that this, quote, dime store DNA, that's what she called it, dime store DNA, was a lie. And that it was just this fact that I just made the whole thing up. And that narrative, you know, collapsed, of course, as time went by. The truth is an absolute defense. You can't dismantle the truth. It speaks for itself. But the wait time for it to stand up and speak for itself, it feels like an eternity in the moment. I had the proof. I actually did go get medical cheek swabs with a couple of my newfound siblings. Angela, the original girl I'd spoken to on the phone, she and I went to a medical clinic and got cheek swabs. So the evidence was overwhelming. My four older siblings no longer have a relationship with me. They were given the same choice I was. You can have her, you can have mom, but you cannot have both. I was excised, if you will, from the branch off the tree, just kind of like a chainsaw, just cut it off, you know. And then it dawned on me, as time went by, things started making more sense. And, that's why that happened. And, that's why that felt like that. And I described it to a friend one day that kind of like being in the bargain basement on the clearance rack rather than, you know, with the regular priced items. Just, you know, if you had to, or if it was cheap enough. I realized all the years I had been everyone's go-to, but I didn't get invited to the dinners, and if they would get together, you know, I would find out about it later. A million little things like that started to fall into place in my memory. And I don't hold a grudge about those things now, but they really hurt at the realizations of them. But they, one of my brothers before he stopped speaking to me, who became my full brother rather than just my half brother, in a brief conversation he did have with me before he was instructed to no longer have a relationship with me, he said, "Oh, a lot of things make sense now." And he's right. I've seen her one time in the 7.5 years, and it was at the funeral for my stepdad that she married around the time I graduated from kindergarten, who raised me, who died 3 years ago. I saw her at his funeral, and I greeted her warmly, and she responded back to me in an equally loving way. And I'm not sure if she really meant it or if it was because she had 100 people watching her. But either way, sitting here right now, I know that my last words to her and vice versa were not angry. It was what was needed in the moment. She moved to another state. I hear about her through my children that she's doing well. She's in her early 80s now. I'm sure she thinks about me. I definitely think about her, as I do my other siblings. But I don't feel as though this will ever be reunified or fixed, because I'm not willing to give up the truth of the matter. It strangely turned into, or maybe not so strangely, turned into really the best thing that ever happened to me, because I went through my entire life thinking I didn't have a father. I would never know what it was like to say the word dad or look into the face of the man himself. And those are the exact things that I ended up being able to do. I no longer called him by his first name. He gave me permission to say, "Hey, Dad." And boy, did I ever wear that out. It was such a strange thing for me to be able to say, "Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad." And in December of 2018, 2 years after my discovery, and after, to my great relief, being able to visit him at his home several times, for hours, hours and hours, we would sit together and talk, and he would stop me, and he would say, I can't believe you're just like me. You think like me. You look like me. You're just so much like me. And we would be talking, and he would stop me and say, stop. Does your mother have any idea how brilliant you are? How do you know all these things? Because I would talk to him about family history and local history, and he thought that I was brilliant and fascinating. I certainly thought the same thing of him. And I just don't know if I've ever received a greater gift than what he was giving me in those moments. I was astonished and just bewildered in the most wonderful way. I cannot believe I'm sitting here with my flesh and blood father. And, you know, such as riding him to the auto parts store to pick up a battery for his truck, and riding in my vehicle, and my dash cam picked up our audio and some of our conversation, of just the most loving things anyone's ever said to me. And my cousin was on vacation in Europe. I received a message from him on Christmas Eve of 2018. Uncle Jack was found dead in his apartment. And I looked at that, and I looked at my phone, and I messaged him back. I said, I don't think that's true. He said, "Oh, look, my brother called me and told me they had to break the door down and he was on the floor of the bedroom and he had been there a while. And my husband, I'm sure, thought something terrible had happened to one of the kids because I just went screaming through the house and I threw my iPad on the stove and I showed him the screen, the words on the screen, that my dad was dead. And when I recovered from that awful moment after, you know, the one big awful moment comes after all the beautiful things. It's almost like a rule. It's almost like a rule that if you have something amazing and beautiful, you have to pay for it with an awful ending. And I thought, you know, I'm so glad that I didn't know that day when I brought him to get his battery at O'Reilly's. And I finally said, well, Dad, I guess I better get back home. It's dark outside. Mid-December, you know, it gets dark early. And I said, well, I guess I better get back home. And I never saw him again. And sometimes now, 5 years after that, 5 years later now, I still, if I'm in my car by myself or just in the house, I'll just still say, hey, Dad. Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad, what you think of this? Or just talk out loud to him because I can't stand the thought now of never being able to do that again. I did try to get, I asked if they would give me the desk out of his living room, which he gave to me just verbally. As we had sat there for so many hours of the most important things that I had ever heard in my life about myself and who I am took place at that desk. It's just a cheap little desk, like a $200 in a flea market, maybe. And they would not give it to me. So I kind of just asked for it in through legal channels, and I was not able to succeed in that. So I went to the court in the parish where I live, and I brought all the evidence of how this man was my dad. And I had to pass a background check and go through the district attorney. But after all the defeat and all the loss and irreplaceable things, both tangible and intangible, the court gave me his name. And so now my legal last name, maiden name, which I kept, the man that I was born to, I kept his name. But I added what would have been my real name. So that's why my name is now Laura Savoy Hanchy, and my married name is Hall. Savoy is Jack, my biological father. Hanchy is the man I was born to, who was killed when I was in kindergarten. Charles, who never did anything wrong, who probably died not knowing anything about this. That had been my name my whole life. It felt, not only felt completely wrong to remove it from my life, I never even considered it. And so now my maiden name on all documents, court ordered, everything, my driver's license, my birth certificate has been amended. I now have my maiden name is now both of my dads. That's pretty much it. I gained more new siblings. I now have, so far, 3 new siblings for a total of 8. And as of this conversation, I now have what I suspect is another new sibling that lives in California, who I have this extremely high match to. I may never know that person, or I may, but I'm open to that possibility and almost inevitability, because my real dad, is a very good-looking guy, you know, and very popular amongst his friends, and he was a chick magnet. I mean, let's just be real. And as it was in the 60s and 70s, who knows beyond that, people do what they do, you know. It's been quite a ride.
Oh.
Yeah.
Laura, it really sounds like it. It's so surreal that your sibling's father, your half-sibling, well, I guess they're not your half-siblings, are they? They're your full siblings, aren't
now,
they?
Yeah, right. They became my full siblings overnight, if you will.
Who do you have for support in your life through all of this? Who's been supportive for you?
Well, most definitely my husband has been my rock.
Mm.
I have so many friends who have strangely, or not so strangely, discovered this very same thing about themselves. Not many of them, but guess who they picked up the phone and called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I am a DNA match analyst now, and not to sound too technical about it, I had to, what I would say, this radicalized me and made me into an activist, not quite so aggressively as the hyperfixation on it that I had for the first 2 or 3 years. I have really calmed down a lot on it. But I had to find an outlet, and a lot of support that you're asking for came in the form of perfect strangers, mm-hmm. who I, by word of mouth or a friend saying, hey, can this lady call you? She's having, you know, an experience. And one of the best feelings I've had was being added to someone's DNA match results and sitting forever, however many hours or days that it took, making charts and graphs and coming up with the comparisons to say, well, either, well, I've got you narrowed down, or in one or two cases, being able to tell them exactly who they were, or if there was one parent that was in question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these were adoptees. A couple of these were adoptees. A couple of them were in my own matches and didn't know why.
Mm.
And so I became friends with new people and the friends that I'd had for my whole life anyway. And a few, very few, cousins. Because my mom's just very influential and well-liked, and I'm glad for her about that. I'm glad that she has that sort of faith. People have that sort of faith in her. She's not a bad person. And I really wasn't, I want to clear something up. I wasn't angry with my mom that she went back and slept with a man that she had been in love with and married to for 10 years. I wasn't mad about that. Never will be mad about that. What I was, I don't even know what the word is, but what I was so taken by, almost not even that she kept it a secret from me. What I could not live with, or what I could not accept being bullied into, was the way I was treated after the facts came out.
Mm-hmm.
When I tell you they tried to destroy me, they tried to legally bankrupt me. They poison pilled me, if you will, to other friends and family members that I had just somehow got it in my head to just make this up out of nothing. Just make it up. Just invent it, you know, which I don't think anyone was ever going to believe that anyway, but it's the fact that it was attempted that I just would never and would never. Now, what I have learned since then is this is not, obviously not a new thing. It's old as time, that it's touched almost everyone you know. It's there are a few people walking around anywhere that there is not more than about a 2 or 3 degree of separation from this event,
mm-hmm.
from the NPE or the MPE, which I would I would assign to myself misattributed parental experience. And the fact that, you know, 10 or, well, 20 years ago or longer, you had to be wealthy to acquire DNA for yourself or, you know, paternity test or what have you. But now on Black Friday for $39.99, you can have your identity delivered to your front door. Mm-hmm. And the fact that millions of people are now being able to access and afford direct-to-consumer DNA, it is, as I have read, and I'm sure you absolutely know, becoming near the top of the top couple of mental health crises in the world. Mm-hmm. Because it just has the ability to really dictate your mental health, sometimes in a good way. You know, the Vietnam veterans that are realizing that they left their pregnant acquaintances or girlfriends behind 50 years ago, and those children are now coming into the databases to look for their fathers who are now my age. You know, the children are now my age. I just dealt with one. And they both learned the truth about themselves very shortly before he died of cancer a few weeks ago. But at least, you know, she didn't get to lay eyes on him. She lives in California. He lives here in Southwest Louisiana. She didn't get to lay eyes on him. But she got the satisfaction of knowing that before he took his last breath, he knew about her. And he knew her name. And he saw her face in a picture. And if that's all she gets, who I really feel terrible for are the ones who never get even that much. And what really upsets me is the thread, the most common thing that I hear about and read about in the now millions of people that this has affected who are all had zero input into their conception and birth. They literally are not responsible for this. The rejection that is the most common response, rejection and denial, which I wish that scale would tip to the acceptance and joy. Oh, we have a new family member. We have a new sister. We have a new cousin. Oh my gosh, invite them over. Yes, wonderful. Mm-hmm. But that's not the dominant response. And it's almost always at the heart of those, of the negative responses, is a woman who is lying, who cannot face whatever happened decades ago, who cannot be brought gently into, look, it's ancient history, but this is the here and now. And, you know, we got to deal with this. And to give them the benefit of the doubt, you know, you have to think, well, oh my gosh, I didn't think anyone's ever going to find out about this. I feel ashamed. I feel like a bad person. And now I'm going to get angry. And now I'm going to demand that people don't talk about it. And on it goes, mm-hmm. You know. But I think the thing I'm most happy about is those of us who had to be on the front line of this and bear the slings and arrows for this. And I'm not even the least of them. I mean, really, I've been able to live with this and emerge from it a better person. What I really am thankful for is that the days of people being able to lie to children about who they are and where they came from are over. It's done. You're done.
Yeah.
And I would say to anyone out there that is, it feels conflicted about this, and maybe you have a secret and, you know, you're scared or you don't know what's going to happen to you, and it's up to each individual. But when the day comes, if it ever does emerge, try to come at it with honesty instead of anger and rejection. because even though my mother is still alive, I lost another parent, you know, and yeah. It didn't have to be that way. But everyone has a right to know who they are. You know, if you came from, if you were the product of a crime, that's a separate, you know, albeit a valid issue, but you have the right to know. And what you and the other people then that are brought into that orbit, what you all decide to do about it afterwards, see each other, not see each other, be a family, don't be a family, that is all in the periphery. The basic right to know your own identity, whether it's a good story or a bad story, just a regular normal story, every person has a right to know who they are.
Mm-hmm. And Laura, it sounds like service has helped you immensely. It sounds like you have a gift for looking at these charts, these centimorgans, helping people identify their genetic truth. I do service work in a different way through podcasting, listening to people's stories. But that's just something that's helped so much through these years. Is
tremendously.
Right? Just connecting with others in the community that need help.
It has been a balm. It has sewn up things, I guess, that were torn in a way. You can still see that it had been torn, but it kind of put it back together in my heart and my brain. And it's just got a healing component to it. It's so hard to, I don't think I've ever tried to describe it. It's hard to describe, but it's putting the positive and the good back out there to kind of cancel out the darker, more painful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's healing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Laura, thank you so much coming on, sharing your story today. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I got a lot out of listening to you. So thank you.
Thank you, Lily.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us. Thank you.